inclination to like send you a message yesterday, maybe giving, saying, hey, there's what we could, here's what's going on with me. Here's what we could follow up on my African neighbor or whatever, like various things. And then I was like, you know, I am not going to do that. I'm just going to show up here and see what wants to happen.
I think that's good.
I mean, you know, we're so popular and people are just like, they're going to listen to everything we say just because they're here. So
yeah, I tried to muffle the banging on the door, the banging the door down from all the fans. I don't know how
to deal with the fame. Do you have a special technique for like muffling the sound of people clamoring for your attention?
No, I just have one door, and usually when I open my mouth, normal humans run away. So it's just the family that's left. Really, it's not too bad. So we can go into any topic you want.
Well, it is funny that, you know, because we both like Human Design, and you know more than I do, but that my type is repelling and does tend to, create confrontation people have with themselves through me. I mean, I'm getting along with people very well for the most part, but it's funny you have the same, you talk like you're a manifester, even though you're not.
I'm an aspiring manifester.
Yeah. Oh,
I look,
you
I
too
look.
Can be hated for not participating in tribal rituals.
Yeah. But people like me look at people like you and you're like, oh wow, that guy has a spine. Wow. I could never say that. Like I could write it, but I couldn't say it. So I have to live vicariously through you.
Let me throw this in that, you know, having a spine, I think in the idea of the authority in the mirror. And I think that this goes for men and women. It's not like genders, like, you know, man has to have a spine, woman doesn't. But I think that we have that being able to author your life, you have to, what it means to have a spine, well, if we say a building has integrity, the building is held up by the physics, the principles of how structure creates stability. And for us, integrity on an inner level is our ability to have a code which holds us upright. And I think that if you're going to author your own life, you can't blame anything outside of yourself for your condition. And I would go so far to say, if this is my unpopular opinion, or has been, if this was something that would trigger people. And before I say it, I'll give you an example of someone who talked like this. Carolyn Mace, I don't know if she's popular anymore, but she was like an energy mechanics.
Yeah,
but she was, she was on Oprah, and she said, you cause your own cancer, essentially.
Yeah, nobody
and then this is before, you know, there was this thing called being canceled. There was just people being upset. Anyway, for me, when I feel that even the victimization, you know, the violation, the things that happen in childhood when you're supposedly innocent are your creations, that your soul comes in to set up to have certain lessons, and you are unconscious when you're a child, and and therefore you are literally at the effect of the creation around you, so that those lessons can be set up. And you know, when you first start to sort of wake up, like after when you know let's say around your teen years or whatever, you start to say, I'm gonna, you fight against it, and you're usually angry with your parents or angry with whoever did, you know, robbed you of your authority, of your inner authority, your outer authority. But at the end of the day, like I 100% believe that you've signed up for that too. So if you really want to be the manifester, the one who authors your life and look in the mirror and say, I am the truth, I know I'm the way, you cannot blame anybody for your condition. You can look at somebody and see what their quality is and flavor and behavior that contributes to your lesson, but you cannot blame them for your state. Your state's up to you.
Yeah.
Your life is up to you.
I learned to follow that a long time ago, only because not because I'm enlightened, but because practically speaking, you get a better life if you choose to believe that.
Your enlightenment notwithstanding is what you mean. You're not about to talk about your enlightenment. You're talking about something else. Go on.
I just meant I chose it for practical reasons, purely practical reasons, like what you get from that view, because it's the only way out. Everything else leads to a sucky life.
Well, I think when people, and I've found this a lot in my work, when somebody finds out, like sometimes I will say to somebody, your anxiety or your sadness or your depression, like I said, that actually is an escape from doing what you want. And I mean, not always, but just suffice to say that, like, sometimes people rest in these things because it's just more convenient than taking the consequences of having a spine, of actually accepting that everything that you're doing is your result. What did you just say? My brain just conked out there.
I was just saying that I chose that for practical reasons, that view of things, the radical self-responsibility.
Oh,
only because you get a better life that way. And every other path, right, if you don't do it, sucks.
I think when people get angry, if they get angry with me, or maybe they get angry with you, with someone who's helping them with this, it's at this particular junction, because you think when you feel offended, it is you thinking it's better to hold on to the story than the fiction that you have about why things are the way they are. But in what I was wanting to say in relationship to what you're saying is that if you say that I'm 100% responsible, it only leads to good things. It really does.
Yeah.
It's the only possibility of true fulfillment and joy is that. But I think a very small percentage of people go there because not only is culture and matrix set up so that you are supported to be a victim, to not be in control of it, or to be angry at somebody or something or whatever, but it takes an autonomy already at the beginning to begin to take the journey towards that personal responsibility. So most people don't do it. And I would even so far to say is that when people do start to do it, because there's a huge industry for personal growth and wellness, people read things. They acquire a knowledge and there's nothing wrong with that, but often at the expense of the deleterious work of, I think I used that word wrong, the hazardous path of feeling your feelings, the hazardous path of experiencing and feeling what gives you agency.
I remember one year in the daily newsletters that I write and send out, I insinuated, because of research.
We have a sponsor for your daily newsletters. No. Oh, by the way, the daily newsletters are sponsored
by me.
Ayahuasca Tabs.
No, I had been.
How
doing...
do they? How does somebody sign up for your newsletter? Just so we're allowed to plug shamelessly.
They can go to my website, jasonleister.co. Write every day about my view on life and business. I've been doing it since 2011. It is free therapy. It is helpful to people, or at least that's my intention. But one issue I wrote years ago, because I was researching, my brother had been diagnosed with ADHD, adopted brother, no longer with us. And so my whole life was spent in and around words like that. And when I started researching one day about that and found that that label was voted into existence by committee, I dared to relay some of that history to my subscribers, and I got this. I mean, I don't get too many angry elf emails, but this guy was really annoyed. Like, it was his whole life and his reason for everything bad and his explanation for all of his limits, and just saying what I said was a real problem. And that's when I realized, just, I mean, I certainly have lived many years in my labels. But this is, that's just one symptom of not making this much bigger decision, which is to own it all.
You know, I think the difference between us, I don't know who's listening, but this is relevant to me, between you and I, is that I think that a lot of your path is to, I think you're looking for a more peaceful way in terms of, like, yeah, like you said, you don't necessarily work with groups so much. I don't think it's in your goal structure to be talking to people who you are going to trigger like that. Is that true?
Yeah, it's probably not a great way to stay alive.
Well, for you, but I think what I've discovered for me is that I am by nature a peaceful person. I did not come here to conflict with people, but I've had a lot of conflict from this very issue. And I did step away quite a bit over the last 5 years or so. And I realize now I'm back out in the world that I am supposed to do this to people. Like, that is my job. It is to put that in front of them, but also find a way to do it that people will thank me for it. And that, like, I've had so many people angry with me from the moment I was born, like, even starting with my parents, like, just for being myself. And I think it was a function of my own resistance, my own process to awakening to who I was, that was reflecting in other people and creating in other people this hostility toward me for speaking the truth. Because I had resistance, often I would blurt things out, I would be tactless, but I would also, like, it would come out very in certain ways. And now I think that, like, you've moved to Hawaii, like, you're, turns out you're a really nice guy. No, I think that you've come to become more peaceful by not participating with people who are not interested in what you have. And in my case, I'm actually meant to be this kind of a trigger out in the world and learn how to do it in such a way that it doesn't cause harm to me and also not cause harm to other people. Yeah. I mean, I don't think anything I was doing was actually causing harm, but for people not to feel harmed by it. And I just think it's interesting because if for anybody who wants to author their own life, you can expect conflict because you are going to be thinking and speaking about things that are not acceptable within conditioning, tribal conditioning. And you have to figure out what is your purpose or your path and your process towards speaking that truth in a way that's going to make your life better.
And so would you say if we're owning all of this,
is it true what I said about you?
Yeah. Yeah. I think my journey has been trying to figure out what to do with the other. You know, at first I wanted to help them or change them or let them know. And eventually I'm just
invisible. You're acting like a manifester.
Yeah. I mean, I'm invisible to those people. You're visible to those folks. I'm invisible. And so it took a long time for my ego to just get used to that and know that now I'm only here for the few, which is fine. And they instantly know it. And I don't have to convince anybody. I just have to, like, show up somewhere long enough.
What do you mean by visible and invisible?
I mean, if I say something triggering to people, most of the time, that story that I told was a big exception. It's like I never said anything. Yeah.
Well, I think it's the same for me. I felt invisible, and I was dismissed and ignored. And as I got older, I realized that as I became a person who could read the inner world better than the outer world, like I realized that people have intent when they do that. When people are ignoring me, it's because they feel
it's
me.
It's an active state.
It's an active state, but I have been ignored. And I think it's the same as you. I'm only really here to work with, to truly help the few and far between, the very small percentage. So I think in the same way. And I will say, just as a quick example, like last week, I've, you know, told you about my neighbor. You know, I'm out in the world again in a lot of ways, and all of a sudden I've got this guy who didn't come through my business door, and he ends up coming to my house, and I work with him, and now I walk down the street and he's out there, and he wants all this stuff from me. And I had to say to him, you know, I'm not a mechanic, and you know, this isn't what I do for a living. Like, I helped him out of pain. But the other, yeah, two mornings ago, I get up very early and I just decide to go out walking with my dog, right? And like, it was like 6 a.m., which I don't normally do. First, I'll do some stuff and then go. So I walk out the front door, and I mean, he lives way down the street, and he was literally walking by. And he's 6'7", but he's still working through sciatica stuff. So he's walking very slowly, and I'm busy and I do not want to walk with him. And also, like, as soon as he starts talking to me, it's talking to me about himself. Like, I realize I've now spent like 5 or 6 times with this guy. The only thing that he ever asked me about myself was one of the first times when I brought him in my house and helped him fill out some disability forms. He asked me if I was Jewish. And later it's like, of all the things you're going to ask me, you know, but he's, I understand he's in pain or whatever, but he stay, like, I have choice, but I've always felt that if I do what I want and be very direct about it, I'll make people angry. And I have. So I was just standing there and I was like, I don't want to do this. I don't have time for this. So I did something different, or maybe on a new level than I've ever done before, which is I just said it to him. I said, you know, I got stuff to do and I can't walk slow, so I'm going to walk off from you. No big deal. But I always feel when I'm standing there. And of course, yeah, he was mad because, like, there's a kind of a snapping out of his sleep that I cause people by doing what I want, because I don't have these ways of behaving that are culturally acceptable. And I did read about in the manifestors with human design that the strategy is we're supposed to inform people. But what he said was, that's just so people don't get angry. We don't actually care. Like, I don't need to inform you. I do it for you so that you can understand, so you can feel better about what I'm doing. So, yeah, but all, yeah.
I've gotten so much. I can't remember if in your human design chart, is your emotional center defined or not?
Well, I'm what's called an ego manifestor. So my heart,
I don't remember.
My heart is my center. That's what, and that means that everything goes back to, like, I don't feel things. Like, I don't have lower centers. So if I feel something, it belongs to someone else. And I think you have the same thing.
Yeah. You know, and the reason I was asking is because for me, the most, because I don't really remember having emotions before, maybe the age of 17 or 18. I'm not sure what was going on then. But these days, having that emotional center open in my chart, more recently has, it just means like an avoidance of the truth, right? So I wouldn't look at that guy and say, I don't want to walk with you. I would make something up, frankly. I mean, I spent a lot of years lying, like little lies, to avoid like the truth. And for a while I thought, boy, this, you're really spineless. And then I realized, oh, wait a minute. I could, in the theme of today's episode, which is owning it, I could actually understand that this might be a signal for the people who I'm okay speaking truth to versus not. Because, like, I don't feel that with you. I don't have that same response, right? So there's like this resonance that has to be present for me not to feel like I have to kind of have my guard up a little bit. Probably, well, a survival tactic.
There's a couple things here. First of all, I'm not sure how I communicated. I'm not sure I told him why. And and I do. So the I think there's owning things and then there's communicating.
Yeah.
So you owning what your truth is in that moment is like the step one that we all need, is which is the hardest step, because if you have pattern and programming and you don't know it, or have a, you know, we're always working on it, you don't necessarily know that you need to own something, because you might have inklings of what you're feeling or what it is that truth is, but you may ignore that. But if you can get to it in the moment, in my story, I got to it. That's been my incredible emancipation this year. It's just like, I know what's going on with me all the time.
Yeah.
And I know what I want. And first of all, when I was a younger person full of trauma, a lot of what I wanted was just coming out of my wounds. So it wasn't necessarily a good idea for me to follow that. But the communication, to me, I'm going to agree with you. Like, if someone is on the outer door of my reality, giving information is an invitation. George, my Tai Chi teacher, who said, you know, I'm not going to set a boundary, because if I have $100 million in the bank and I tell you where it is, tell you not to go there, then you're going to know exactly where it is. Like, a boundary lets you know where what you're protecting lies.
Mm-hmm.
So he'd say, I'd rather be like steam. So I would just say that if I felt like I didn't want to tell somebody what my business was, it not necessarily lie, but I will divert the attention to something, because I don't want to have a relationship with how they feel about what I'm doing, because it's none of their business what I'm doing. And I did have that struggle with that guy in the moment, because all I want to do is walk my dog and get to the piano. And I've got a million things to do, but every time he demands my time, I tell him I'm really busy, but I can feel the part of me that wants to say, well, I've got phone calls and I've got normal things happening, things that you would understand that are important. Like, if I say I'm practicing the piano, it sounds like I'm having fun. Well, I am, but and like, having fun is more important than hanging out with him. And it is. But saying this to somebody who's in their own energetic configuration that's really intense, like a rock can crush a flower. Like, if somebody's in that's a certain energy stream, and you get in it by participating and having a relationship, you're a lot likely going to get overtaken by them. So I think a little lies that are not immoral and not hurtful are totally worth doing.
Yeah. I was reading this book about privacy, written by this
anonymous
missionary
person.
Yeah, he didn't use his real name, but he had been a missionary in Spain when it was illegal, and so he had developed all these ways to evade and hide, and he wrote a book about this, and I remember his definition. So he was very devoutly religious, as I was raised, and his definition was to give incorrect information to someone who was authorized to receive the truth. And I had never thought about
it. Say that again slowly. That's so good. Say it again.
Yeah, to give incorrect information to someone who's authorized to receive the truth. And of course, yeah. It had never occurred to me that someone might not be authorized for me to spill the beans about everything.
Yeah.
Because that's how I was raised, which was a defining moment that I'm telling even now, like 20 years later.
Well, that's what pearls before swine means, isn't it? Doesn't it?
I mean, sure, that fits. But I forget in my Bible school what we certainly weren't taught to think that about that phrase. I forget what we were taught to think about it, but
well,
because this was the first time that concept hit me.
Yeah, I mean, anyway, they could be interpreted lots of ways, but the idea is that, I would say, if there is some spirituality to religions that maybe got lost in the pedagogy or whatever, then your truth is your pearls.
Yeah.
And like, it's not meant for everybody. And I say in my system with the 10 animals and the movements, like the last region is the transpersonal regions, the eagle and the hawk. Like, you have to look in the matrix and see what you want in it, like having a hawk eye or an eagle eye, and like ignore everything else. And the idea that you're supposed to feel everything that's going on in the world or have a relationship with whatever comes in front of you, I think is incorrect. At the same time, if something's in front of you, you do need to make a decision about what to do with it. But I would say over at the restaurant, I'm so sensitive that anytime people are coming in and out, like I can see them in the corner of my eyes when I'm playing, and like I'm learning after a year of playing that to try so hard. I'm not even that successful. I'm more successful at tuning it out, to just say my reality is this, not that. And if they want to come into my world, then I'll ask myself, why am I here and what do they deserve? I feel like it is that conscious to me what this guy is saying. Like, I'm always thinking about that, maybe because I'm hermetic and I'm solitary, so that whenever somebody comes into my life, there's always a feeling of like, why am I here? And sometimes it's that I'm not here to, I'm not authorized to give you anything. And that's my lesson, to just ignore it.
I didn't have the concept of my truth. Like, that wasn't a thing that existed to me until probably I was like 27. There was the truth, and you would not dare to question the truth. But my truth was not a thing, which is hilarious, because of course, if you don't have that or know that you have that, there's no way to do this self-responsibility thing, because there's no compass.
How would you define my truth versus thy truth? The truth was
what I read in a book and was told every morning and on Sunday.
But if you think of the truth as being that's never going to change.
Yeah.
Like as a real thing, not as a religious thing.
Yeah.
I think you have some concept of that.
Yeah.
What do you think it means to have your own truth? What's the difference?
Well, it is that for you. It's the same. Yeah. It's that same thing, but applied to you. But I'm saying I wasn't in the picture. There was just this external, validated, unquestionable, but extremely manipulated, as I came to find out, goodness, version that was out there. And so if anything like that is the guiding force in your life, there's no way you can do this self-responsibility thing, because there's nothing to anchor it to.
You can't be responsible if you don't have a truth.
No.
because you don't have a spine and you don't have integrity. And
you can be guilty. You can trespass. Yeah. You cannot follow the rules. Yeah. But self-responsibility can't exist, which I'm a little conspiratorial, of course. So you wonder, like, that's a pretty powerful tool to inflict upon humanity.
Sorry, what's a powerful tool?
To create a mechanism by which self-responsibility is kind of, by structure, is made not to even exist as a possibility.
Oh my God, you're aquarianing out of me. Say it one more time.
I'm just saying, like, I wasn't, no one ever looked at me and said, Jason, what do you feel about this? What is true for you here?
Yeah, yeah.
Without that, you can't. Just like if there is not a word for a thing, it doesn't exist. If there is not a space in the concept for self-responsibility to exist, and there wasn't in my world, then that's quite a way to manipulate people. If you were like evil and wanted to do that to somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think because children are unconscious, they live in a reflected light. And if the light, what's reflected back to them doesn't illuminate them, then they don't grow up having a sense of autonomy, authority, or selfhood. They have something borrowed from whoever told them whatever was shined on them or not shined on them.
Yeah.
And I think also, like, in the idea of my truth versus the truth, like, there, I don't know when this kind of came to me, maybe in my 30s, but that because I was seeking enlightenment through my paths and processes, like, that was literally what I thought I was doing, but I had this didn't have the training or the reflection from teachers that the idea that I'm just use the example, like, I am the drop of water in the ocean existence. I am the whole of existence, but I'm also not that. But that my truth is is the drop. So to be, my truth is to be that unique drop that is not separate from the whole. And I think that that's what it should be. A truth that's given to you that is an unchanging, eternal truth, the Tao, and then your job is to be a version of that that's specific to you, and that includes your human mistakes and stuff. But what you're saying, or what I think happens for most people, is that you either get no reflection, so you're blind, you can't, there's no light on you, you don't know anything about yourself, or you're put a light on you that isn't the truth. And then you're, in your case, growing up Mennonite in Pennsylvania, right? You're even told that what they're telling you is the truth. Like, 'cause some people grow up in religious houses and some people don't, but you grew up in, you not only, because it's, whatever people tell you, that's their religion. But you grew up in a religious thing where you were told that what was being told to you was the truth. So you had like a double brainwash. You had the regular brainwashing of unconscious people telling you what reality was that was false. And then you have the thing on top of it telling you that this is God.
Yeah, it was crazy. Like, when you grow up in a bubble that has co-opted the word believe, and it only applies to what you believe, and everyone who doesn't believe that isn't a believer. I mean, that's some pretty high level brainwashing.
You know, I've never shared this. It's not that big of a deal, but it's interesting to me. Long before I was ever in this kind of world, I was in my 20s, and I used to smoke weed in like my mid 20s when I was a musician. And one night, like, I got into this frenzy and I started looking up words in the dictionary, and I don't know where it is, I'd love to find it, but I got in this whole thing around the word belief. I mean, I didn't read till I was 15. I failed English, so I didn't have a great vocabulary or anything, but somehow I got stuck on that word.
You just said Aquarianing today. So
Aquarianing.
But the message,
yeah,
got
that's
through.
That's in my dictionary. Aquarianing out. Yeah. Well, anyway, the fundamental thing that when I wrote my first book is around the word belief. When I looked up the word means to opinion or conviction.
Yeah.
And I realize that belief is a function of the linear mind, because you don't need to believe in gravity. You don't need belief. Like, all belief inherently has doubt in it. It isn't, there's the truth and then there's belief. Now, faith is, if I have a faith, then that's different. But if I believe in something, I'm in the mind. It's a total waste of time. I believe in gravity, Jason, by the way. You know, or I don't believe in gravity and I'm going to walk off the edge of this cliff because I'm going to believe I can fly. You know, so I think that religions are inherently based around the idea of belief, of having an opinion, a conviction about something, having nothing to do with the truth. And my Sufi's teacher, my Sufi teacher's teacher, spiritual teacher said, he came up from a Christian background. He said, Christian church, believe in angels, you're in. See angels, you're out.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. So, yeah, belief. You don't need belief. Belief is, and I think that's why when people start arguing about facts or politics or data or information, they're just in the mind, because they're just talking about something lower level than the soul. They're talking lower level than everything, which is belief. I think it is, belief is the biggest colossal waste of your energy, believing in things.
So what do we leave for our listener? Or maybe he brought a friend. Maybe we have
listeners. Give up belief and give up hope. Because hope is another thing that's a waste of time. You are the author of your life. You don't, hope puts it outside of you, and belief puts you at a distance from it. Hope makes it seem like it's magical. And belief, meaning that you're not personally responsible, and belief makes it seem conceptual. And it's neither. It's right here, right now. You have agency. It's in your breath. It's in your body. You have choice, and every choice leads to a consequence of which you are responsible for.
That's good. And you failed English?
I not only failed English once, I failed it twice. I didn't read my first book till I was 15, Jules Verne, Mysterious Island.
Wow.
I don't think I finished it. My first discovery of reading that I could read and could read was Kurt Vonnegut, maybe around 18 or 19, like, and I read everything he ever wrote. And he made up lots of words too. Like he was, yeah. But yeah, I was sent around like I was, I had cognitive. I couldn't really read and write till maybe I was 7 or 8. I don't remember, but yeah, they thought I had problems.
That's funny.
I did.
Author of multiple books. All right.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. That's it.
All right.
That's a good one.
I feel like that show Car Talk. You've wasted a good half hour of your life. We return you to your regularly scheduled life. Now take this back out of your life and own some shit and get back to us.
That's good. See you next time.
Bye.